Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are in the throes of, actually the final throes of the North Carolina debates. Now, not sure if we'll finish them because there's still some meat left. And when we ended in our last episode, we were just wrapping up some comments that were being made by Mr. Lenore regarding the commission of the delegates who went into the Constitutional Convention. Of course, he was complaining. And you know, I'll just say this, so you understand, because again, you've heard me rail about any of these organizations that are claiming, anybody that claims that the delegation that went into the Constitutional Convention exceeded their commission. Well, that's kind of tantamount to, you know, the squeaky wheel, just like with the 14th Amendment. There were lots of people that were, you know, making a brouhaha about the 14th Amendment, about, you know, they shouldn't be doing this and so forth. But if you look at the vote of passing the 14th Amendment, it received its two-thirds vote. So you can't go by how many people claimed that they, you know, exceeded their commission, because in each of these conventions where it was a contention, in each, Virginia, South Carolina, they put this to a vote. They tried to actually derail the ratification of the Constitution by saying we shouldn't be doing this. We should reject this altogether because they exceeded their commission. That's exactly what these culprits that were involved in this cabal in trying to protect the thiefdom of the state so that they can maintain their power at the expense of the Union. And so, you know, I don't care how many people, I really don't care how many people were brought forward and what they said about the commission. Bottom line, as it was described, oh, these guys overexceeded. And the thing that really appalls me is the fact that there is supposedly an alleged organization that claims to be a champion for the Constitution, and how they sully the Constitution by claiming it was illegitimate, that this whole process was illegitimate, which basically these supposed champions of the Constitution calling about, you know, making comments about a runaway convention, all they're doing is they're giving fodder to the progressives who want to get rid of the Constitution in the first place. We've got to stop this bad sell so that we can help support our argument against the Convention of States. There is no call for a Convention of States. The only reason why we would ever amend the Constitution or even nullify some of the federal, you know, actions or federal law is because there's a problem with the Constitution. When it comes down to violations of the Constitution, we must act in interposition, period. That's exactly what Madison and Jefferson were doing. They weren't nullifying. Jefferson may have made the mistake of using the word nullify, and he may have been speaking in behalf of being the vice president at the time. But the fact of the matter is, Jefferson and his clarity regarding what they were doing is absent because he understood how he would really cross the line as the sitting vice president. I think at this point in time, Madison was not engaged in government when he wrote the Virginia Resolution. So he went to the Virginia legislature and wrote that, was involved in the debates. Anyway, needless to say, I'm giving you this insight between what one said about the commission and what, you know, the anti-federalists, and then what the federalists said, because again, they went through these debates and arguments prior to even debating the Constitution. They wanted to shut this down right up front. Patrick Henry wanted to shut down the ratification of the Constitution. You know, there's a lot of people out there that, you know, real, they love Patrick Henry. They you know, have these quotes, and he's like an idol to them or whatever. And, you know, I'm not a fanatic about anybody, but I will tell you that when it comes to personal integrity and character, James Madison was probably the giant amongst these other giants, amongst his field of giants, because he never wavered in his paradigm. Once the Constitution became something different than what he wanted, he was on board with it 100%, period. Where Hamilton talked out of both sides of his mouth. Jefferson, he spoke as best as he could, and that's why he didn't speak to it as much, because he really didn't understand it. Same thing with John Adams. Same thing with George Washington. But there were other men who really did get it, who really did understand it. James Monroe, he didn't. And unfortunately, it seems like some of the presidents that we had back in those days even really didn't understand the Constitution as well as they should have. Because James Monroe would not have signed the Missouri Compromise had he understood the Constitution. He would have called the Missouri Compromise unconstitutional. That Missouri has its own self-destiny and they can choose for themselves as a people. But instead, they allowed those who had the financial affluence to buy the government that they wanted instead of allowing the people to let that state go in the direction they wanted it. Anyway, and that's what happens all the time. That's what's happening today. Soros is buying up governments so he can move governments in the direction he wants, not to the desires of the people, not to serve, to kill the people, to kill and consolidate government, kill people and consolidate government into controlling us so that they have unattested control over every facet of our lives. Global communism. Anyway, so as you know, the show is also sponsored by republicreview.org. And as you also know, this is the only show that gives you the academic evidence. We read, and I know I'm not the best reader, forgive me, but if you listen, you will garner what they are saying. Sometimes it cruises pretty good, and then sometimes some of the words and the choppiness of the lack of punctuation and those types of things, and actually the outright misspellings. I'm not trying to justify my poor reading, but I actually have a great comprehension. I can read really fast, but reading out loud is a lot different. And I haven't read out loud since I've been a little kid. So anyway, I beg your forbearance, and I hope that you are actually gaining something out of this. And I'm hoping that you share this. We started these ratification debates on the 29th of March. So if you just send, you know, an email to your friends that really want to understand this, they may not have the time. You know, during this 1 hour segment of a 24-hour day, some people just don't have the time. They're driving, they're engaged at work, they're in meetings. Send them the link. Send them the days of how long we go through this so that they can download these things and put them in a playlist. And then they can listen to the ratification debates and understand the Constitution as they describe every clause and they argue and debate over this. Again, this is like the scriptures for the Ten Commandments and or the higher laws that Christ induced, because even though they may have actually wrote the law, you don't understand what, you know, how to live that law unless you read the scriptures, unless you investigate to understand these things. So anyway, let me kind of move on. We've got a comment line, 425-270-5416. And let me also thank you for tuning in. And with the 2 minutes we have left, what I'm going to do is I'm going to reread what I read yesterday. Mr. Chairman, this is Mr. Lenore again, and he has a few different complaints. The first one is, Mr. Chairman, I conceive, and this is all about the commission, by the way, I conceive that I shall not be out of order to make some observations on this last part of the system and take some retrospective view of some other parts of it. I think it is not proper for our adoption as I consider that it endangers our liberties. When we consider the system collectively, we must be surprised to think that any set of men who were delegated to amend the Confederation should propose to annihilate it. For that and this system are utterly different and cannot exist together. It has been said that the fullest confidence should be put in those characters who formed this Constitution. We will admit them in private and public transactions to be good characters. But, sir, it appears to me that every other member of this committee, that they exceeded their powers. Now, he's speaking for everybody here. He's saying, it seems to me and every other member of this committee that they exceeded their powers. So when we're done with this, I got a couple, few more sentences to go. I'm going to actually play or actually read the response, and then I'll come back up and read his other complaints. Those gentlemen had no sort of power to form a new constitution altogether. Neither had the citizens of this country such an idea in their view. I cannot undertake to say what principles actuated them. I must conceive they were mistaken in their politics and that this system does not secure the inalienable rights of freemen. It has some aristocratical and some monarchical features, and perhaps some of them intended the establishment of one of those governments. So when we come back, I've got another little long sentence to read, and then we'll actually read the rebuttal. I think it's from Mr. Spate. Let me see here. Yes, Mr. Spate is the one that will be responding. He's the Federalist. So we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so to wrap up Mr. Lenore's complaint about the commission, he says, whatever might be their intent, according to my views, it will lead to the most dangerous aristocracy that ever was thought of, an aristocracy established on a constitutional bottom. I conceive, and I believe most of the committee will likewise, that this is so dangerous that I should like as well as to have no constitution at all. Their powers are almost unlimited. And, you know, this is all unfounded because they've already gone through all of the different powers, and the fact is that they're very specific and they've been denned accordingly. So Mr. Spate then gets into his, his comments, And so this is what he basically says here. Let me see here. This is Mr. Spade. Oh, no, this is not Mr. Spade. Yeah, this is Mr. Spade. This is the committee. Forgive me. Mr. Chairman, I am one of those who framed this Constitution. This gentleman says we exceeded our powers. I deny the charge. We were sent with a full power to amend the existing system. This involved every power to make every alteration necessary to ameliorate and render it perfect. In other words, to change it and render it perfect. It cannot be said that we arrogated powers altogether inconsistent with the object of our delegation. There is a clause which expressly provides for future amendments, and it is still in your power. What the convention has done is a mere proposal. It was found impossible to improve the old system without changing its very form. For by that system, the three great branches of government are blended together. All will agree that the concession of a power to a government so constructed is dangerous. The proposing a new system to establish by the assent and ratification of 9 states arose from the necessity of the case. It was thought extremely hard that 1 state or even 3 or 4 states should be able to prevent necessary alterations. The very refractory conduct of Rhode Island in uniformly opposing every wise and judicious measure taught us how impolitic it would be to put the general welfare in the power of a few members of the Union. It was therefore thought by the convention that if so great a majority as 9 states should adopt it, would be right to establish it. It was recommended by Congress to the state legislatures to refer it to the people of their different states. Our assembly has confirmed what they have done by proposing it to the consideration of the people. It was there and not here that the objection would have been made. This convention is therefore to consider the Constitution and whether it be proper for the government of the people of America. And it had been proposed by any one individual under these circumstances, it would be right to consider whether it be bad or good. The gentleman has insinuated that this Constitution, instead by securing our liberties, is a scheme to enslave us. He has produced no proof, but rests it on his bare assertion. An assertion which I am astonished to hear, after the abilities with which every objection has been fully declared, refuted in the course of our debates. I am, for my part, conscientious of having had nothing in the view but the liberty and happiness of my country. And I believe every member of the convention was actuated by motives equally sincere and patriotic. And then he goes on to address the other complaints, which we really hadn't covered yet. So now what I'll do is I'll go back up and I will read the 2 other little comments that he made, one of which was regarding exclusive legislation. It appears to me, and this again is Mr. Lenore, it appears to me that instead of securing the sovereignty of the states, it is calculated to melt them down into one solid empire. If the citizens of this state like a consolidated government, I hope they will have virtue enough to secure their rights. In other words, he's arguing for a Bill of Rights. That's, you know, kind of an oblique way of doing it. I am sorry to make use of this expression, but it appears to me to be a scheme to reduce the government to an aristocracy. It guarantees a republican form of government to the states when all these powers are in Congress. It will only be a form. It will be past recovery when Congress has the power of the purse and the sword. The power of the sword is explicit terms given to it. The power of direct taxation gives the purse. They may prohibit the trial by jury, which is most sacred and valuable, and a valuable right. There is nothing contained in the Constitution to bar them from it. And how many times have they already said, if it's not enumerated, they can't meddle with it, like religion or common law or trial by jury? It's not listed. So if it's something that the states are doing, the states would continue to be able to do it because that power was not delegated. But he's not proving any of that other than making these, like Spate said, these bare assertions. The federal courts have also appealed at cognizance of law. In fact, the sole cause of which is to deprive the people of that trial, which it is optional in them to grant or not. We find no provision against infringement on the rights of conscience. Ecclesiastical courts may be established, which will be destructive to our citizens. They may make any establishment they think proper. It's not even delegated that they can establish a church. Religion is completely void in the Constitution, and here he's saying that they can establish their own. They have an. This is why I say, friends, that the Bill of Rights was more of a problem until the 14th Amendment. Because at this point in time, the states, because they got the Bill of Rights, they became lackadaisical in looking what the federal government was doing. Oh, well, as long as they're not setting up a religion. Oh, well, as long as they're not taking our guns. You know, what they were doing was they were creating powers that were not delegated, like the Department of Interior. They were trying to create the Department of Transportation. And, oh, well, that doesn't mind us because they're not violating our Bill of Rights. Are you kidding me? Had we not had the Bill of Rights, the states would have been looking at everything the federal government did and understanding that they only have enumerated powers. They'd see, oh, well, this Department of Transportation, that's not enumerated. You can't do that. Department of Interior, oh, that's not enumerated. You can't do that. Getting involved in the trains and transportation again, you can't do that. Agriculture, labor. Had they not created those Bill of Rights, and had the Bill of Rights been basically created for application to the states instead of application to the federal government, and we maintained an enumerated constitution, I think we would have been able to avoid what the federal government's been doing lately, and especially what the state's been doing. Anyway, they have also an exclusive legislation in their 10-mile square to which may be added their power over the militia, who may be carried thither and kept there for life. You got to remember that they can only do it for 2 years because that limitation was very expressly placed in the Constitution, that they can't have a standing army. Should anyone grumble at their acts, he would be deemed a traitor and perhaps taken up and carried to the exclusive legislation and there tried with a jury. We are told there is no cause to fear when we consider the great powers of Congress. There is a great cause of alarm. They can disarm the militia. They can, if they were armed, they would be the resource against great oppression. The laws of a great empire are difficult to be executed. If the laws of the Union are oppressive, they could not carry them into effect if the people possessed of proper means of defense. And so, you know, this was really, I mean, he was really reaching out there because obviously he didn't understand that it was we, the people, the militia, that was supposed to enforce and execute the laws of the Union. He goes on and on and on, and then he goes after slaves, or he makes his observations regarding slavery. Much has been said of taxation and the inequality of it on the states, but nothing has been said of the mode furnishing men. In what proportion are the states to furnish men? Is it in proportion to the whites and blacks? I presume it is. This state has 100,000 blacks. By this constitution, 50 Negroes are equal to 30 whites. This state, therefore, besides the proportion she must raise for her white people, must furnish an additional number for her blacks in proportion as 30 to 50. Now, when they're talking about this, they're talking about taxes and representation. So remember, the whole compromise was, hey, if you want blacks to be counted for apportionment of representation, then you're also going to be taxed on it too. But they didn't give them full representation because the South wanted to claim that they were property, not men. Suppose there be a state to the northward that had 60,000 persons. This state must furnish as many men for the blacks as that whole state. exclusive of those she must furnish for her whites. Slaves, instead of strengthening, weakened the state. And see, they knew this, and this is why they created this situation. This is why, when they shut down the slaves trade, the slave trade, I should say, it took only 12, 14 years, maybe? Something like that. 12 or 14 years for the Missouri Compromise to come in. So, anyway, we're going into a break, and we'll get right back into this. But I'm trying to give you the big picture here, because as he's complaining in this myopic form, you know, we actually see what happens beyond this and how some of these compromises were designed to hurt slavery. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so remember, as I was trying to hurriedly state this, that because they threatened to leave the Union because they were going to get rid of slavery, they made some deals getting rid of the slave trade in 1808. They incorporated, literally what was defined later on as unconstitutional, the giving up of, even though it was in the Constitution, it violated the fundamental premises of the Declaration of Independence and the tone and or the paradigm of a free nation. So anyway, that's why Wisconsin actually nullified, because that was a repugnant law within the Constitution that violated the greater law. Anyway, as they kind of moved forward, they started recognizing that, hey, you know, there are, you know, we are put in a position where our equality and in representation and apportionment will be dwindled, because with plantations, they lock up the land and they're only going to need so many. And if slavery is capped in the South, where it can't go into any other state, eventually the free states and the free people would be able to get rid of slavery. Now, the process they went about it later on was reprehensible, because they should never have conducted economic warfare. what they should have done was they should have gotten the Missouri Compromise compromised all of that. And that basically started showing you that the disadvantage for slaves was in the Constitution. In other words, for these slave states, they truly had a disadvantage. This is why Van Buren went, and you know, the first Democratic vice president, the guy that founded the Democratic Party, he was the one that started the what was it called, the gag order in the Senate. They could not talk about slavery. They eliminated the ability for them to discuss and openly talk about slavery because of the gag rule. And so as Missouri came along, this is where they nefariously created an unconstitutional power to keep certain states in the certain latitudes of the United States, slave states, and to the north, they could be free. Well, that doesn't jive with the Constitution. They can't do that. Anyway, so as he starts kind of exposing this, I'm just hoping you realize that when people tell you that the framers of the Constitutional Convention were out, all of them were outright, you know, slavery supporters and racists and so forth, they're lying. There is absolutely no evidence of this. As a matter of fact, the majority of those who were part of the Constitutional Convention were years ahead of America in trying to actually eliminate slavery in the United States. Anyway, so Mr. Lenore goes on and says, the regulation, therefore, will greatly injure it and the southern states. There is another clause, which I do not perhaps understand. The power of taxation seems to me not to extend to the lands of the people of the United States, for the rule of taxation is the number of whites and three-fifths of blacks. In other words, the way that the states were to be taxed would be based on their population instead of the land of the state. And that was smart because, bottom line, if you only had 70,000 half and half blacks and whites, slaves and what have you, then you don't have a robust economy to basically pay for the taxes by the square mile instead of by apportionment of people. Should it be the case that they have no power of taxing this object, must be direct taxation be hard upon the greater of the state? I am not confident that it is so, but it appears to me that they cannot lay taxes on this object. This will oppress the poor. Oh my, it is time for me to do something. That was an alarm. I'm sorry. Let me get back and repeat this. I am confident that this is so, but it appears to me that they cannot lay taxes on this object. This will oppress the poor people who have large families of whites and no slaves to assist them in cultivating the soil. Although the taxes are to be laid in proportion to three-fifths of the Negroes and all the whites, another disadvantage to the state will arise from it. This state has made a contract with its citizens. The public securities and certificates I allude to, these may be negotiated to men who live in other states. Should that be the case, these gentlemen will have demands against this state on that account. The Constitution points out the mode of recovery. It must be in the federal court only because controversies, financial controversies between a state and citizens of another state are cognizable only in the federal courts. That was changed, by the way, by the 11th Amendment. They cannot be paid in gold and silver. Actual specie will be recovered in that court. This would be an intolerable grievance without remedy. Okay? So we already read Mr. Spate's response and how he basically backhanded Mr. Lenore for his sentiments regarding the commission. And he goes on, and Mr. Spate goes on in responding to his other comments. He says that it will attend to an aristocracy. Where is the aristocratical, there it is, not era, aristocratical part of it? It is ideal. I always thought that an aristocracy was that government where the few governed the many, or when the rulers were hereditary. This is a very different government from that. I never read of such an aristocracy. the first branch are representatives truly chosen freely by the people at large. This must be allowed upon all hands to be democratical. The next is the Senate, chosen by the people in a secondary manner, through the medium of their delegates in the legislature. This cannot be aristocratical. They are chosen for 6 years, but one-third of them go out every second year and are responsible to the state legislatures. The president is elected for 4 years. By whom? By those who are elected in such manner as the state legislatures think proper. Now, I just want to highlight this because this is all about the Electoral College. The president is elected for 4 years by whom? By those who are elected in such manner as the state legislatures think proper. Show me where it says that the parties take control of this. Only where the state legislatures, not the parties, think proper. I hope the gentleman will not pretend to all of this aristocratical feature. The privilege of representation is secured in the most positive and unequivocal terms and cannot be evaded. The gentleman has again brought on the trial by jury. The federal convention, sir, had no wish to destroy the trial by jury. It was 3 or 4 days before them. There were a variety of objections to any one mode. It was thought impossible to fall upon any one mode, but what would be produced some inconveniences. I cannot now recollect all of the reasons given. Most of them had been amply detailed by other gentlemen here. I should suppose that if the representatives of 12 states, with many able lawyers among them, could not form an unacceptable mode, because that's how many people were there at the convention, and he pointed out that most of them had law degrees or were considered lawyers, this convention could hardly be able to do it. As to the subject of religion, I thought it was had been said with fully satisfying the gentleman and every other, no power is given to the general government to interfere with it at all. Any act of Congress on this subject would be a usurpation. No sect is preferred to another. Every man has a right to worship the Supreme Being in the manner he thinks proper. No test is required. Actually, no test of it is forbidden for public service. All men of equal capacity and integrity are equally eligible to offices. Temporal violence might make mankind wicked, but never religious. A test would enable the prevailing sect to persecute the rest. I do not suppose an infidel or any such person will ever be chosen by it to any office unless the people themselves be of that same opinion. He says that Congress may establish ecclesiastical courts. I do not know what part of the Constitution warrants that assertion. It is impossible. No such power is given them. The gentleman advises such amendments as would satisfy him and proposes a mode of amending before ratifying. If we do not adopt first, we are no more a part of the Union than any foreign power. It will also be throwing away the influence of our state to propose amendments as the condition of our ratification. If we adopt first, our representatives will have a proportionable weight in bringing about amendments, which will not be the case if we do not adopt. It is adopted by 10 states already. The question then is, because Virginia had just adopted, the question then is not whether the Constitution be good, but whether we will or will not confederate with the other states. I want to point out he used the term confederate because they weren't federalizing. They were maintaining their autonomy. He also says this, and he wraps it up with this one. The gentleman supposes that the liberty of the press is not secured. The Constitution does not take it away. It says nothing of it and can do nothing to injure it, but it is secured by the Constitution of every state in the Union in the most ample manner. And so when we come back, he makes some comments regarding exclusive legislation, and then we'll move on into some other abuses of power much later on in the convention. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, that's kind of interesting. That just came to me. Why is the convention of states really dangerous? It's not necessarily the fact that the convention exists. Actually, when people realize Republic Review and what it can do, the concept of having the need of a convention is absolutely ludicrous. We don't need to ever put the Constitution into a position where it could be rewritten. Now, again, I don't want to assume that that's what would happen, but what came to me is that the men that are pushing this and claiming to have these amendments, they don't have consensus. What they want to do, and what you must do, is if Mark Levin really wants to, you know, pee on the Constitution and make his mark on it so that his name lives in infamy, okay, well, Mark, get the other states, get enough states, 2/3 of the states, to demand those amendments. Then that provides plenty of firepower to force Congress. And as a matter of fact, I don't think you need to get to 2/3, get 30. You get 30 states all on board with any one of your dumb amendments, which won't solve the problems we're facing today, because the problems we're facing today has nothing to do with the Constitution. It has everything to do with the federal government usurping the rights of the states. Come on. The federal government has no power to do all of the things, or most all of the things it's doing. And so the only way to deal with that is not by saying there's a problem with the Constitution, that we have to address the elephant in the room. And the elephant in the room is the federal government needs to be forced into compliance, period. End of story. That's why convention of states is dangerous, is because we don't have a problem with the Constitution. Why would we even want to consider allowing these people to think that they can even give us a better Constitution? Because that's the only reason that makes the convention of states unique in the amendment process, period. Anyway, as we kind of move forward then, what we want to do is we want to kind of end it with this. The gentleman supposes that the liberty of the press is not secured. The Constitution does not take it away. It says nothing of it and can do nothing to injure it. But it is secured by the Constitution of every state in the Union in the most ample manner. Now, moving on, this is where he gets to address the exclusive legislation. He says, Mr. Lenore objects to giving the government exclusive legislation in a district not exceeding 10 miles square. Although the previous consent and concession of the state within which it may be is required, it is to be supposed that the representatives of the people will make regulation therein dangerous to liberty. Is there the least color or pretext for saying that the militia will be carried and kept there for life? Where is there any power to do this? The power of calling forth the militia is given for the common defense, and we can suppose that our own representatives chosen for so short a period will dare to prevent a power given to the general government protection to an absolute oppression. But the gentleman has gone further and says that any man who will complain of their oppressions or write against their usurpation may be deemed a traitor and tried as such in the 10-mile square without a jury. What an astonishing misrepresentation. Why did not the gentleman look at the Constitution and see their powers? Treason is there defined. It says expressly, the treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to the enemies, giving them aid and comfort. Now, what is giving war or levying war against them, the United States? By allowing an invasion to go along our southern border. And as we understand how he just clarified treason, we do have a treasonous Congress. Anyway, complaining, therefore, or writing cannot be treason. Here, Mr. Lenore rose and said he meant misprison or treason. The same reasons hold against that, too, is what Mr. Spate said back to him. The liberty of the press being secured creates an additional security. Persons accused cannot be tried without a jury, for the same article provides that, quote, the trial of all crimes shall be by jury. They cannot be carried to the 10-mile square, for the same clause adds, and such trial shall be held in the state where said crime shall have been committed. He has said another objection, that land might not be taxed and other taxes might fall heavily upon the poor people. Congress has a power to lay taxes, and no article is exempted or excluded. The proportion of each state may be raised in the most convenient manner. The consensus or enumeration provided is meant for the salvation and benefit of southern states. It was mentioned that land ought to be the only object of taxation, as an acre of land in the northern states is worth many acres in the southern states. This would have greatly oppressed the latter and not the former. It was then judged that the number of people, as therein provided, was the best criterion for fixing the proportion of each state, and that the proportion in each state to be raised in the most easy manner for the people. But he has started another objection, which I never heard before, that Congress may call for men in proportion to the number of Negroes. The article with respect to requisitions of men is entirely done away. Men are to be raised by bounty. Suppose it had not been done away. The eastern states could not impose on us a man for every black. It was not the case during the war, nor ever could be. But the quotas of men are entirely done away. Another objection which he makes is that the federal courts will have cognizance of contracts between states and citizens of another state, and that public securities negotiated by our citizens of those of other states will be recoverable in specie in those courts against this state. That they cannot be negotiated. What do these certificates say? Merely that the person therein named shall, for a particular service, receive so much money. They cannot be negotiable. The money must be demanded for them in the name of those therein mentioned. No other person has a right. There can be no danger, therefore, in this respect. The gentleman has made several other objections, but they have been so fully answered and clearly refuted by several gentlemen in the course of the debates that I shall pass by them unnoticed. I cannot, however, conclude without observing that I am amazed he should call the powers of the general government indefinite. It is the first time I heard the objection. I will venture to say they are better defined than the powers of any government I've ever heard of. And that was a very powerful point, because bottom line, that was the truth. There was no way that any other government had ever been denned by an enumerated constitution. Rome, Egypt, all the governments, they all had general powers. Britain, even throughout Europe, general powers were always granted, because Europe was nothing but a land of monarchs. They didn't have a free republic and people. And during the Revolutionary War of France, they went right back to a dictator. They may not have had a monarch, but they had a dictator. So anyway, now Mr. Iredell makes some comments regarding the abuse of powers. And this is what he says. The general ground of the objection seems to be that the power proposed to the general government may be abused. If we give no power but such as may not be abused, we shall give none. For all delegated powers may be abused. There are two extremes equally dangerous to liberty. These are tyranny and anarchy. The medium between these two is the true government to protect the people. In my opinion, this Constitution is well calculated to guard against both of these extremes. Look at what's going on today. We've got anarchy going on because nobody is applying the rule of law and the Constitution. We need to start actually using Section 3 to get rid of every public servant who refuses to live up to their oath of office. They think they can get away with it, folks. You've got to get involved. You've got to step in so that we can take back our constitutional republic by using the Constitution. It's the supreme law of the land. They cannot violate their oath of office without being disqualified. They are required to stop this invasion and to deal with this invasion by executing the laws. If we've got people here that did not apply for immigration, they are invaders and must be dealt with. People need to understand that we're not a mean government. We have laws and there are processes to come here. You just can't, fling, your excrements and epithets cursing and swear words. There's a better word for that, but you just can't get away with doing those things and coming here to invade us. We have a right to have a secure nation, and we have laws to protect that and enforce that. Folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the republic, and we need your help. We're going to pick up where Mr. Iredell left off on the abuse of powers. God bless. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com for custom pricing.